Just one other thing. If you spot Montgomery, report it. Nothing more. Remember, this is an FBI operation.
Wait a second. Excuse me, Captain. There's something a little ripe here. Let me ask you a question. What you're asking is that you'd like us to sit on our butts on some low-priority shit detail on the off chance that we're going to run across some bad people, and then what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to give you a jingle so that you can make the arrest and get the keys to the city? Excuse me, Captain. I'm sorry. I don't like to sound negative, but this is bullshit. I'm a cop. You understand me? I'm not a security guard. I see some bad people. I'm going to be a little too busy to make a phone call.
Hope the attitude doesn't affect the performance.
Would you like to see how this attitude...
Are you through, Mr. Lisi?
We'll call.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and back in the saddle is Sam Stepanenko.
So I have a question. When does using your binoculars to watch somebody become stalking?
When it's your job to do so. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, they were literally, a stakeout is stalking.
Yeah, it crossed a line there.
Well, yes. They were definitely enjoying the job too much at times. Yes. Trish Coughlin?
Hey, everybody. Yeah, I guess the answer is it's not stalking if you have a badge.
If you're getting paid to do it?
Yeah, if you're a detective. Well, what's funny is you mentioned that, and Madeline Stowe's getting watched, but then there was like another movie with her and Kurt Russell, and I think Ray Liotta later on, where he's a cop, and he's stalking them and
That's
her.
That's unlawful entry, and so yes, it's terrible.
Yeah, so she's had a lot of problems with stalking.
Yes. Well, movies. Have you seen her? I can see why.
True, true. She is an extraordinary, incredible woman. Like, I find her so watchable. She's beautiful.
And she has so much class.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, for only her second film and her kind of her first lead, I felt like she was kind of acting circles around everybody else.
Yes.
So you guys found that too?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Dreyfuss was probably the weakest performance in the whole movie.
Yes.
He was hamming it up just a little bit too much.
Yeah, you know what? It was a well-reviewed movie. I got a sequel. It was part of that buddy cop thing, but I found it so, like, forced and flat through the whole thing. I'm like, why did this get a sequel? Like, nothing gels. Maybe it's because they're trying to do the crime drama fairly seriously and the comedy's not landing, but I don't think anything landed really well in this one.
No.
I mean, box office doesn't always make a good movie, but I don't know about you guys, but I did not like this movie. I do remember seeing the sequel years ago and really not liking that movie, but mainly on the heels of Rosie O'Donnell is like nails on a chalkboard.
I remember liking this movie better than I did this time, that's for sure. Because you're right, is the humor was weak at best. And the action was also weak at best, so it never really quite gelled into anything coherent.
Yeah, and you have their rivalry with this other partnership of cops.
Which was unnecessary.
It's just filler. Every time it happened, I'm like, it's like they're just padding the runtime.
Oh, and I so totally much padding. It is 2 hours long with a plot that barely could run a 45-minute procedural on television. It is such a mundane, basic plot, which is going to make it real easy for us to remake on based on that skeleton. But to have the kind of humor and hijinks that were in there, like you'd think they would make it work better to drive that movie, but it didn't. None of it worked, and it was so juvenile when it did happen. And these cops are fucking inept.
Yes. And it's a shame because the chemistry between our three leads was excellent. All three of them, like they did feed off each other really nicely. And I think that's why it worked when it came out in 1987, 88 was because you had sort of these big name stars. And in terms of like their dynamic, there was a good dynamic, but the story around that dynamic just didn't work.
I think I get to disagree with you a little bit and agree with you at the same time. Yes, it didn't work. I don't think there was any chemistry whatsoever between the three leads at all, especially between Dreyfuss and Emilio Estevez. No, I thought they were terrible together, and I didn't even buy the romance with Richard Dreyfuss, but maybe it's because I was just popped out right away. The whole thing was just eye-rolly to me.
Yeah, see, to me, sometimes I think it was... When it was the chemistry between Dreyfuss and Madeline Stowe, I think I was just a little bit in love with Madeline Stowe because it's kind of like, I see why he's into her.
No, absolutely.
And that's pretty much what I was going with.
Yeah.
She's a fascinating person.
Yeah.
But with the two leads, it's sort of like, it seemed like they set up a bit of a juxtaposition between the two where Estevez was like, he was a young detective, but like he had a family that he's still really into, and like he had a good stable home life, and they hint at it and then they never do anything with it.
Yeah, well, that's
part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's part of the problem. I mean, if your humor's not landing, we have a subplot where Dreyfuss's wife has left him. We've never even met her. She's just gone. Mm-hmm. And we hear about this happy home life of Estevez, and we don't see that either. And those are good things to fill out your runtime with, and how that affects the family as well. And you can add humor there. Kids add humor. And I think getting to know them as characters and people would have definitely helped.
Yeah, because they did flip one thing on his head, is they had the older guy sort of be the sort of loose cannon.
Yes.
And have Estevez, as you said, the young sort of idealistic guy with a family and wanting the job security. He's trying to follow the rules by the book, and his partner keeps sort of walking that line and crossing over it. And I liked that because they kind of turned that trope on its head a little bit. But I think you're right, Jay. I think part of it was you never really get to know these characters. You just sort of get thrown from one bit to the next with no connecting tissue.
Yeah.
But there is one thing that connects them, and that is going to be brought to us by our brand new segment, A Mustache Moment with Trish Coughlin.
Yes, the mustache moment. One of the most disturbing parts of this movie is the mustaches. I find Richard Dreyfuss's very kind of creepy, a little bit longer, it would have been mustache twirling. And Emilio Estevez's, I'd like to make you a star. Perhaps we can take some pictures in the back of my van mustache. This is where we're sitting at. But what was weird is both the creepy mustaches add to the perviness of watching a woman across the street.
And that was A Mustache Moment with Trish Coughlin.
Thank you.
And I'm going to say yes to everything she just said. Because, Estevez should never have a mustache.
No, it felt like that really tropey from the 60s, cops got to have a mustache.
Yeah.
But I think they just put it on him because he looks like a child.
Yes.
Yes.
He was only a few months, maybe a couple years out from having done the Breakfast Club and playing a high school student.
Yeah. You know, and it could have been where, when they talk about the bad comedy in this movie, part of the comedy could have been where he's like, he's grown the mustache to look older and to get people to take him seriously, and they still don't. That could have been a whole thing.
Oh, lots of opportunities for actually genuinely funny things that they just don't do. It bugs me. It's like, there is something there because it is fucking ridiculous.
Really is. I mean, and just say like the just two guys with mustaches staring through a window at a woman and taking pictures. Yeah. Somebody needs to say something. See something, say something.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, it really paints them in a bad light when you really think about it, because that scene where she's starting to get undressed and stuff like that, and they're getting all excited. I can tell you right now, on a real stakeout, the cops would be more respectful than that.
Yes.
Or they should be more respectful than that.
Yeah, or they should be sitting there like, this is what's happening, so she's going to go to sleep, so maybe we'll change off on who's going to be on the camera because there's not going to be much action.
Yes.
Like just business, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've gone into the serious end of things, but I mean, it's something you notice though, especially in our current climate, you kind of start to spot those things, maybe a little more sensitive to them than we used to be.
You know, I think a young cop, he's going to go, oh, okay, this is a bonus, but at the same time, yeah, there's going to be some professionalism about it. But then again, who knows? I mean, we're not cops.
Yeah.
They, of course, they need to do things to lighten the mood, and sometimes they're going to be distasteful to people like us on the opposite side of the fence. But as long as they're keeping it to themselves and not making that pervy stuff public. I mean, when you're a detective, sometimes you're exposed to things you don't want to see, whether it's, you know, when they joke about that it was a, they were going to be doing a 300-pound woman and it was just a joke on Dreyfus, but that was an untasteful joke. And to find out she was attractive, okay, great, but they're still dudes. But it doesn't age well in this climate.
No.
And the other thing, too, is if it was a 300-pound woman, well, you know what? You still have to watch her dudes. It's still your fucking job.
But exactly. They're going to, they got to do it regardless. And you're going to sometimes see things you don't want to see.
Absolutely.
Or you probably maybe you just don't want to, so much as you, is that you might not be comfortable seeing or probably shouldn't see under normal circumstances.
Yeah. I mean, a stakeout is keeping your eye on the prize regardless of what they're doing.
True.
Yeah.
And speaking of lightening the mood, the pranks in this movie were just pathetic between them and the other cops.
Agreed.
Like, it's supposed to be funny. Like, they drop a bunch of toilet paper on the one guy. Oh, ha, ha, ha. Oh,
yeah, these are sad jokes if you were in junior high.
Yeah.
Greasing the binoculars. It's just, my God.
Dog poop in the fridge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
these aren't very clever pranks. They are base level. Like, did you ask your children what you should be doing on this set?
Yeah. Right?
The only one that was any good and it was still distasteful was the cat in the car. That was actually kind of funny.
Was that a bobcat?
Well, I kept thinking.
I thought it was supposed to be a bobcat. It was just a feral cat. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Just a regular feral cat. But I kept sitting there the whole point where I'm like, going, you know what? Pranks, in certain instances, pranks are kind of like sex. Keep animals out of it. Don't do anything like that.
Because that might have got those guys killed if they were driving fast.
Right?
Yeah. It was funny. I appreciated the thought that went into that one, even though, like, you're right, keep animals out of it.
Yeah. Now,
These two cops also are not good cops. We see them on a case. Actually, the movie opens with our perp escaping jail. That is why they're on the stakeout in the first place. They've been put on one person just in case he shows up, a low priority stakeout, while the FBI have got the more important spots, because this guy is a cop killer and he's on the loose. Once we flip to the introduction of our two cops, they're also on a base stakeout on a perp, and they're chasing him through a fishery. And through ineptitude with the forklift, the guy gets away. Forklift goes in the drink and some hijinks with fish. It's a whole thing. And they screw up their own collar. And it happens again when they first get to the stakeout and they're planting the bug, and the perp's actually calling. It was like the worst case of timing. It's not really their fault, but the perp's actually calling at the time they're making the plant, the wiretap, so they miss it.
And I actually liked that setup.
That one was all right, because it does make sense, and maybe because of that first scene was meant to set up that just these guys have the worst luck.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was clumsy and it wasn't funny. The one thing I do like about the opening scene is the fact that the character they introduced, that the perp that they're trying to chase, actually has a purpose at the end of the film.
I agree. He does come back around, and he's basically the getaway driver, boat driver for Stick. So it was nice to see that caller kept coming around. And I mean, we do see him again. The basic rule of three. So we see him three times. By the third time, we see that he is important. And that's why we keep seeing him over and over and over again, because he can actually ID and finger the two cops.
Mm.
Yeah. And they actually set that up really well in his second appearance, because he almost outs Chris in the cop shop the first time too. So it's actually a nice little bit of foreshadowing also.
Yes.
Like, that's probably the only thing they did that was really well constructed in this movie, is that particular appearance.
Exactly. I also want to talk about Aidan Quinn's sidekick buddy who breaks him out of jail. And as they're going along, this to me was one of the more fascinating characters in the movie, because he brings up several things. Like, he asks Aidan Quinn, what do you think happens to us when we die? Like, we've got a character who's just thinking deep shit all the time. And I'm like, let's pay more attention to him.
That could actually be good to build up some humor on that side, as he's making his way across the country to Seattle, which was actually Vancouver.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you brought up Aidan Quinn, and I mean, I love Aidan Quinn. I think he's a great actor, but not in this. He did the wide-eyed Nicolas Cage manic performance that he is not capable of.
Yeah, it's not. Like, he's dangerous, but then you're like, eh, you know.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
He's better with quiet menace.
Yeah, yes. I thought he was fine. It was kind of nice to see him this young and not in a romantic comedy of some sort. Yes. Initially, when he had the beard and stuff, I didn't recognize him right away. And I'm like, oh, and then I saw the eyes. I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, that's Aidan Quinn.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Kaler would – Kaler, what a hipster name that was. But that
right?
That's something you can lean into with that character, I think. I think you nailed it with if it was constantly this high thought and all these deep thoughts coming out. I think that would like be when really great.
Yeah, and like, when he hires the when he shoots the guy at the gas station, he's sitting there counting the money. He's like, "Oh yeah, so that was worth taking a human life." Like he's really thinking on a high level.
Yeah, he is. Kind of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. It.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, it's unfortunate. He helps this guy break out, who's just violent and has no value of human life whatsoever, and he's just bringing heat on them the whole way.
Right.
Yeah, killing people unnecessarily. Well, killing anybody is unnecessary, but specifically is he gets what he wants and he still kills them. And they're trying to establish that he is a psychopath, but I don't know. I don't feel like it. Well, actually, no, it works because they're always under pressure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it just comes off as stupid after a certain point where you're like going, no wonder you got caught. You're dumb as a sack of hammers.
Yeah. That's part of the problem is I think we need to make him a little more viable as a viable villain. I mean, we don't even know his motivation for the route he's traveling. We know he's probably making his way to Madeline Stowe because you don't do a stakeout with our characters who are being featured and then not have the villain show up. But we don't know. At any point do we know why he's going there, which I kind of actually dug when he finally just rips open the back of the couch and pulls out the money. I'm like, oh. All right, that was actually kind of cool because they never told us.
But wait, doesn't he say that she's got the money, but she doesn't know it when they're in the bar?
Oh, yeah, that's right, in the bar, yeah.
Yeah, I like the idea of that being a MacGuffin, though, like where you don't know. I kind of like the element where she thinks that he's coming for her, but really he's just coming so that he can finish his getaway.
God forbid she had redecorated in the year and a half he was in jail.
Right?
She threw out the couch? I would fucking love that. That would be funny.
Somebody got a street couch and they made it like a bandit.
Or they don't even know, right?
Yes. It's like some kids who are new to the city and they're like, we got a street couch.
So you could even set that up. Like you could even see, have Chris and Bill watching her put the couch out on the curb.
Yeah.
And seeing the street kids take it away.
Yes.
Actually, I got an even better one. What if it's already sitting out? And they've got this empty house. They want somewhere to sit. They put it in their stakeout house.
Oh, yes. I saw where you're going right away. I'm like, yeah, I like that.
Because it's a terribly uncomfortable place. They have nowhere to sit, but the couch looks good.
And they could keep making comments about how uncomfortable the couch is, that it's lumpy and it's like poking them in the back all the time.
Yeah, because it's full of money. That's perfect. I love it.
Yeah, it would happen later on where maybe he saw a picture of the old house and then he sees the picture in a photo album or something of the couch that they have over there. And then he starts putting two and two together, especially when the guy comes to rip up the furniture and, you know, nothing's in there.
Yeah.
Because it's the wrong furniture. But I think that would be pretty funny.
That would be a lot funnier than anything else in the movie than the original. Yeah.
All right. Well,
and it would bring it back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they would have like solved the case, gotten the money. Like it's a nice tie up.
Yeah, I agree. See, we already ended it. All right. But before we get any further into remaking this, we've kind of covered the basic plot already. But before we get into it, we're going to run the trailer and we'll be right back with more Stakeout 1987.
So who are we watching anyway?
Her name is Maria McGuire.
Long brown hair, brown eyes, 313 pounds.
313 pounds. Let me see that.
I would imagine that's fully clothed.
Oh my God. Oh, she could be the house.
This is disgusting. I hate this job.
two undercover cops on the trail of an escaped killer, staking out the house of his unsuspecting girlfriend.
I think she's gone on a diet.
Everything was routine.
Lucy, you got some explaining to do.
Until one of them stepped out of line.
I was supposed to be watching the house, right? So I was watching the house from the inside.
Out of the shadows.
What a bozo.
And into the picture.
I don't believe this.
You like spicy?
I love spicy.
I'm gonna kill him.
You're nice.
I'm not that nice.
Look, Maria, there are things about me that you don't know.
I don't know your name.
Bill.
Get out of the house.
It's you I want.
Get out of the house. Guess who this is?
Cover me!
Nothing going on here, just some dull old police work.
Honey, I'm home!
No funny stuff.
No funny stuff.
You used to be a hell of a cop, man.
You're a cop.
You've
been watching me?
I'm not going down with you.
I hope you believe in reincarnation.
Yeah, I think you're right. I screwed up.
Touchstone Pictures presents Richard Dreyfuss and Emilio Estevez in a John Badham movie.
Did we practice safe sex?
Probably not.
Stakeout. Who says a little danger can't be a lot of fun?
That was a trailer for Stakeout from 1987 from writer Jim Kauf, who wrote The Boogans, National Treasure. He created Grimm, the television series, and wrote the script for a movie we covered in episode 80.
Taxi.
And directed by John Badham. He was like all over the 70s and 80s, especially the 80s, because he directed like War Games, Bird on a Wire, The Hard Way, Short Circuit, Blue Thunder, and Saturday Night Fever, as well as Sam's debut as a regular cast member from episode 30.
That'd be La Femme Nikita and Point of No Return specifically.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
This movie stars Richard Dreyfuss as Chris Leesey. That was it. And We've talked about him one more time prior to.
Two.
Oh, well, I remember him from episode 148.
I'm guessing that's Piranha 3D.
Yes. What was the other one?
He was also in Poseidon, the remake.
Shit.
Yes, that's true.
Emilio Estevez. As far as I know, we've only talked about one time in episode 131.
That one I only found one. Yes, that was Repo Man, which was a fun one to remake.
It was. Madeline Stowe, we've never talked about before, but she plays Maria McGuire, and finally happy to talk about her because she's a spectacular actress, even so early in her career. She would go on to do some big name movies like The Last of the Mohicans and 12 Monkeys.
Yes.
Aidan Quinn was Richard Stick Montgomery, and he's been in lots of stuff. Legends of the Fall, Benny and June, and we talked about him fairly recently in episode 225.
Practical Magic?
There we go. Trish got that one before Sam did.
Oh, I waited because I knew she'd get it.
Yes.
It was your moment.
Yeah, whenever I'm sure Trish will remember, I always try to pause and let her make sure she gets
Thank
a chance to
you.
Say it.
Dan Loria was Phil Kolchenk, one of the day shift stakeout cops, where the little war between them is going on. He would go on to do 9.5 Weeks and the regrettable adaptation of The Spirit.
Forced but didn't he also do The Wonder Years?
Possibly. I only write down a couple of things, man.
Oh, true. But yeah, I think that was what he was most known for, is the dad on The Wonder Years.
Okay.
Yeah.
I never watched it. Not once. Although I do remember it had a cool voiceover.
Yes. Daniel Stern, I believe.
That's right. Episode 286, Forrest Whitaker. We talked about him there. He plays Jack Pismo. Episode 286 was...
I missed Forrest. Oh. Run, Forrest, run.
Well, Forrest Whitaker, we talked about him in episode 286, Body Snatchers.
Yeah.
Oh, well, just a few weeks ago.
And I missed that.
Yeah.
Damn, Sam.
That's okay. So now we're evened out.
As usual.
Yeah. Ian Tracy was Kaler Reese, the very deep guy who broke Aidan Quinn out of jail. We talked about him in episode 89.
Insomnia.
That's right. And Earl Billings plays Captain Giles, and he would go on to things like American Splendor and Anton Fisher, who's a very well-established and fantastic actor. That's kind of our primary cast there.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's not a very big cast.
No. I mean, kind of the genius of doing a stakeout movie is you can keep your budget fairly low and your location small. So you've got Madeline Stowe's house, the stakeout house, and the cop shot and a few exterior scenes for the action at the beginning and the end.
Yeah.
You know, budgeted at only $14.5 million. So it was fairly low budget. You know, when you think about things like Lethal Weapon that would be coming out, all the cop action movies that come out. Yeah, this was probably pretty cheap in comparison to most of those. But it would go on to make $65 million plus, thus the sequel.
I mean, I saw this in the theaters when it came out because I was of the age. As I said, I remember liking it quite a bit then. And yeah. I mean, Emilio Estevez was a draw at that point as well. So I'm certain you're going to see a lot of your audience coming from people going, oh, Emilio Estevez, isn't it? I'll go watch it.
Yeah, there's a window in his career where lots of things were happening for him. I mean, Young Guns and Breakfast Club and, you know, there was quite a bit of stuff where Estevez and Charlie Sheen specifically would get together and lots of movies were coming out with both of them.
Yeah. Well, and then you have Men at Work, which is both of them in the same movie.
Yeah, that was the one that came to mind, actually. But, yeah, and Young Guns. He was hot. Yeah, Young Guns, which I think was after this, but I don't know. I'd have to look it up. He was huge for a few years, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And this is definitely one of his weaker films. There's no question. Yeah. But there are parts to like, I think. I think that the general story does give you just sort of a fun ride. I just think that with a lot of these jokes, they just don't stand up is the problem. I think that as an older person and in a different time, the humor was topical and doesn't land anymore.
No.
I don't know. Some of that humor feels old even for 87.
87.
Yeah, some of it does, but.
And childish for 87. Yeah. I have a question kind of out the gate, and it was one thing that was bothering me because I wasn't sure how to deal with it. The phone thing, because people don't really have landlines or anything like that. So I was just curious, would we put it back in the 80s so that we'd have the landline problem? Or because, I mean, I kind of want a phone bug at some point in this because that helps the plot sort of move.
Yeah, but I think now they could probably just do that with a computer tap. Like, I don't even think they even have to go into the house to do it anymore with the technology they've got. So I'm not sure how to work that specifically. Oh,
we turn on the Find My Device. He sneaks in to turn that on.
Okay.
On the phone.
So track her movements?
Like, yeah.
But he can't come in as like a phone guy.
He can come in as an internet guy.
An internet guy.
Oh, I suppose, if it's a Wi-Fi thing, you can still do the repairman gag, I guess.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, it happens so quickly. Like, they needed to at least seed it. So if the phone's already tapped, they can intervene and have her call. Then go over and do the install.
Yeah.
But you can't, the way they did it in the movie was like, it was literally cut it and they were at her door.
Like,
it was too quick, too soon to be even viable or viable.
Oh, and that could be like actually a gag where she calls and be like, can you help fix my internet? And I'd like, oh, a repairman will be over there between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. and have them sitting there. And one of the guys is like, can I go over now? And he's like, no, it's like 11:30. It's still too early.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's between this time and this time in a day of the week that ends in a Y and a month that ends.
Oh. And then he's like going, oh, she's going to the bathroom. Quick, run over now. You gotta ring the doorbell while she's on the can. It won't make sense otherwise.
Now, I don't want to blow my casting too much here, but I wanted to change some dynamics. I mean, I like the idea we came up with, like showing family dynamics with these characters. With my casting, the partners, I did a male and a female.
I
also made our male lead super handsome, super ripped, and gay.
Nice.
So to have him be the Chris version and going in there, suddenly it reverses because she's into him and he's got to basically pretend to be straight, which is just amusing her partner, who probably would do the same thing if the dude was straight.
Nice.
So we'd have a lot more fun there, and we'd have the female partner talking in his ear, trying to tell him how to be straight.
And you know what it could do? It could also sort of, part of the problem was like, he inserts himself into her life and like sleeps with her before he even tells her the truth. But if it's like a gay cop and at the end he's like, yes, I am a cop, and like, I do want to be your friend. Like, it's not about sex or getting something from you. It sort of makes it, I don't know, to me, a little less icky, where he's sort of like, I know I had to pretend, but I really like you as a friend. I just want to keep you in my life.
Well, I think he does the confession near the end like he would have in this movie. The action scenes happens, goes back to the car, and she's less mad now and tries to go in for a kiss, and he backs off in a bit and goes, oh, you weren't done when you were confessing, were you?
Yeah.
And that's when he goes, actually, no, I'm gay.
Yeah, I quite like that. It didn't occur to me, obviously, but I do like it. I think that's really does change the dynamic and adds another element to that deceit that he's perpetrating.
Well, I mean, yeah. Part of it, like, he's getting in there. I hated the fact that he was always posing for the camera across the street. Drove me nuts. It's like, you're on a fucking stakeout. You're undercover now. You've basically put yourself in a position where you're now an undercover and you've involved yourself in her life. So stop fucking posing. She's going to see
it.
I saw it too many times and she was right there. She should have seen it. It bugged the shit out of me. So to pull that away, because I think it's cheap humor anyway. Not that mine's any less cheap, but to have him being awkward as she's being forward and trying to build a relationship with somebody she finds attractive. But I think we can move the humor into something else.
Yeah, and you can have a lot of fun, especially when you have like your partner who is like literally feeding him lines through the Cyrano de Bergerac type of thing through his earpiece. I think that's genius. I really like
it. And you know what you could, what I like the idea of maybe tying it up at the end where he's like, yes, I am gay and I still want to be your friend. And first thing we're going to do is really dig into
your hair.
No. Be like, we're going to really dig into your choices of men. Something very wrong. We need to figure out why you're choosing the men you're choosing.
There was also one other
including
thing.
Including me.
Yeah. There was also one thing I wanted to also do. I wanted to make her a single parent. It adds a different layer of complications as well, as this would be Stick's son or daughter, that she doesn't want this guy coming back into her life. It also gives us a thought of maybe a misdirect of why he's coming back in the first place.
Yeah.
And the complications of having a child and maybe the child's seeing things that mom isn't.
Yeah, I like that. And certainly at the end, too, it makes Dick that much more reprehensible if he's coming just for the money and doesn't give a shit about his kid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I kind of cringed, to be honest with you, Jay, but at the same time, I now that I've sort of thought it out, I like it.
Yeah.
And now you're casting a kid.
Yeah. And I don't have that cast.
I didn't either. I mean, it was just something that was rolling around in my brain that we might or might not do, but yeah, we'll say miscellaneous child casting number 12.
Yeah.
Get to work, casting director. Make us a star.
And I mean, the kid could be, she's like, yeah, no, I moved with my kid like very far away because it was just better us to be far away from their dad.
You know what? You could make that part of the setup as well, is because in the original, he's in a prison in Wyoming and she's living in Seattle, right?
Yeah.
So you could have had her move to Seattle fairly recently, within the last, say, 6 months or so. And that's why they still have that shitty old couch from Wyoming. And now that they're sort of settled, they're buying new furniture and that's why it's out.
There we go.
Yeah.
And it also explains why they're so far apart as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was odd that he was in jail in Wyoming and she was living in Seattle and the furniture was all there. So I'm like, well,
yeah,
okay. I mean, he could have been arrested on a warrant from something he did in Wyoming and been exported back, but none of that's really explained. And the only reason they made it so far away is so it would take him a long time to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this at least gives it a reason for that journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. The journey makes sense because it's basically a countdown. So seeing those as he gets closer and closer, it creates more and more tension as we're going to get to that inevitable confrontation moment. in a 2-hour movie, it seems so far away.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And it also lets you get to know that character a little bit better, theoretically. I mean, you get to see how, what his motivations are and how little he cares for anything except for where he's getting to.
And I kind of, with the cop thing, there's two, to me, it's like Richard Dreyfuss just shows up randomly too often. I mean, I would start to find that creepy after a certain point. So it would be good to like maybe minimize those a little bit, like maybe have them talk on the phone a bit and he's just trying to hide it.
I mean, the accidental bump into each other things, like the first time was because he was planting a bug or doing something and we've kind of made it a cell phone thing or whatever. Some not so great, but genius plan in their minds. But after that, it's like, okay, well, he was getting some groceries for their stakeout, and there she was. There she is at the station. But he does keep barging into her house. She never locks the door. You have a con as a boyfriend you know has escaped, so jail, because it's all over the news, and you're not locking your door?
Right? Or maybe you've locked your door, but somehow he gets in. What the fuck is going on?
Right?
You'd be worried. And it's like this new guy just keeps showing up. That's not good.
Well, they did a good job of sort of setting all those up. The first time was deliberate. The second time was entirely an accident because of proximity, grocery store.
Yeah.
And he didn't sort of think through that she might shop there too. The third one, there was a reason for her to be at the police station. She was coming to collect her brother who had been arrested.
Yeah, but the showing up at her house often
happens. That part, yeah, that's where it gets a little on the stalkery side.
Well, and here's a thought. I mean, you've got a stakeout happening across the street. They're not supposed to be seen, but it's like, how are you not supposed to be seen? You could feasibly have them posing as a family that moved in.
Yeah, especially if you're gender swapping the Bill character,
yeah,
making it a Billy, yeah.
Although then it starts to screw up the relationship problem with Madeline Stowe or the perp across the street.
Even better. They're not a partnership. They're partners in a business. That house is falling apart. They're
house flippers. I like
house flippers.
Yeah. And the day job guy, they're day workers. So that's why you keep seeing the same couple of guys and you just have them show up with tools and a van and work clothes, right? So it makes it look like they're doing stuff when they're not. You could literally have like a stereo with construction sounds.
Yeah.
Oh, and what you can do is at certain points, if she knows that they're flipping the house across the street, maybe she's got like something where like her cabinet door falls off and she's like, oh crap. Cause she doesn't like, she didn't move any tools. She's like, I know who has tools. And then she wanders across the street.
Oh, that would be fucking like, hilarious when she tries, he's going to go over to help her, but he has no idea how to help her.
Yes.
Nice. I think that would be hilarious.
Nice.
Yes. Then it would establish they could have time to chat while he's completely screwing up and trying to fix something.
Yeah. Well, I love that to have we've got this macho guy who can't do anything that's masculine. He doesn't really know how, and their masculine one is going to be the female.
Yeah. And she's walking through how to do things, so he manages to make it work kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, well, then you fix that. Hey, do you want to come over and do my tub?
Yes.
Right? Like she could start asking him to come over and fix things, even though he doesn't do a very good job. And she could even get on the. She could even say to her child, "It's like, you know, I don't know if they're going to make him any of that house. He's a pretty shitty handyman."
Yes.
She's like, "Well, he can cock my tub anytime."
Yeah, or the kid's like, "You know what?" The kid's sitting there going, "Like, you know, once they fix that house, I don't want to go in it. It might fall down."
Yeah, you could have some fun with that, right? That they recognize that he's not very competent at this type of thing.
He's clearly in over his head.
No, I think that would work really well.
Well, it must be a good idea because it's popping us already.
Yeah.
He's trying to do stuff. What's funny is at the end when he learns all this stuff, he's like, my husband's so happy I learned how to fix a few things around the house.
I like that.
Okay, well, I think we got a pretty good structure here. Throw out some more ideas if you want to get them in here now. Okay, so we've got a family life for her. We got a gay cop as our lead. The partner is probably going to have more screen time. I always felt like Emilio Estevez wasn't really doing much other than being the brunt of the joke most of the time.
Yeah.
Except for the fish bit. So we've got that character doing a heck of a lot more in that Cyrano de Bergerac kind of way that Sam pointed out.
Oh, and I want I want the Emilio Estevez character to be like gossiping with their wife or spouse, being like, you cannot believe what we went through today.
No, I see. I was going to flip that and have Billy be the one whose partner, like, the boyfriend or husband, has moved out. Because Jay just set up the whole idea of Chris being the one with a husband. And I really like that. So yeah, you flipped that and she's the one who's now living alone.
Yeah, well, I kind of wanted the character to be attracted to her own partner, but of course he's gay, right?
Yeah.
So, see, I just thought that, like, they were just a really good partnership and that they're both kind of okay.
Well, I want her to be frustrated that everything's, like, it's so easy for him, regardless, as a husband, as a girlfriend now. And she's like, God damn it. But I want that to be her humor as well. You're going to love my casting for this, although you might not. We'll see.
No, my casting goes pretty good in this, actually.
Yeah, I'd have to change my Chris. I think I'm a big advocate of, if you're going to have a gay character, you have a gay actor play them. But
yeah, that I did not do. But yeah, that would have been good too. But I had a distinct type in my brain. And I'm also thinking who's going to be a draw to the theaters as well, right?
Yeah. So, well, instinctively, I just go with Matt Bomer.
Ah, see, I went with Shia Jackson. Yeah. Yeah, Matt Bomer is gorgeous.
He is gorgeous, and he's a good actor. If we're going with that, that's who my Chris will be, but I'm going to tell you who I chose originally, too, when we get there.
Me too.
I feel like we're kind of there. We're already talking about it, so why don't you keep going, Sam?
Okay, I didn't mean to do that to you.
No, it's actually about time, so.
Okay, so for my original Chris, I went with Paul Rudd.
Nice.
I think that still would have worked.
Yeah. For my Bill, who's now Billy, I went with Rosario Dawson. I think I used her recently as well, but I saw her in that role as the one with who's going to follow the rules.
I almost used her as Maria.
Interesting, because for Maria, I went with Priyanka Chopra, because I quite like her, and I think that she's beautiful too. So
very good.
And for Stick, I went with John Bernthal, because I wanted, again, somebody really menacing rather than somebody who's overtly psychopathic. For my Phil, because I did cast Phil and Jack, I've cast Bill Hader as Phil and Kevin Hart as Jack.
That's a good combination.
Mm-hmm. I thought so too. And I did cast Kaler. I cast Shawn Mendes, the singer, because he has been doing some acting and he's actually pretty good. So I thought that somebody, because I wanted somebody young, just like in that young, because sort of not really had been exposed to the kind of life that Stick actually has and is kind of shocked by what he's experiencing.
Mm-hmm. I struggled and I was trying to find something with like youthful and able to portray that. Youthful but deep.
Yeah, I was going youthful as well because he was a handsome, youthful dude. But yeah, somebody who's really young, maybe new to the crew kind of thing. Or even a brother. I don't know. You really don't know what his motivation for breaking him out in the first place was.
Yeah, like he asked to get paid, but then nothing comes of that.
And I think that's where the counting the money comes in too. And then for my director, I just wanted to see Taika Waititi do this one. I think that he does a good balance of action and comedy. So, and I've never used Taika before, so I figured why not this time?
No,
and
that's great.
I didn't have my director, so I'll go with that as a director as well.
You know what, Trish, I'm never wrong with Taika Waititi. You'll always jump on that bandwagon. I know this.
Absolutely. I love him so much.
Very on brand.
And that's the extent of my casting.
All right. Well, since Trish has already stolen a director, why don't you keep going?
And a Chris.
Well, with my Chris, I actually went with Cheyenne Jackson once we decided to make him gay, and John Cho originally, but John Cho had already played a gay character as Sulu is gay in Star Trek. So I think I was already leaning that way. So that's kind of fun.
Okay. I'm also giving you a 1 month ban on John Cho.
Thank you.
He's off the table.
There's just not enough John Cho in my life. That's what's happening.
I feel like maybe we should just get you a mail order Cho.
You should. You really should. Please. I would love that. And for Bill or Billy, I went with Kristen Stewart because I would like to see her kind of try like just the rule following cop. I think she just has that cop energy too. So I think she could do that.
Do we give her the mustache? No, that's a bridge too far.
No.
But I can't get it out of my head now.
You know, I think I would like to see her disguised as a workman with a hat and a mustache, like, and sunglasses. Oh, yeah,
and be the same mustache, just as a throwback. I like that.
Yes, absolutely. And then for Maria, I went with Stephanie Beatriz from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, because okay. I just like to see her in a lead role. For Stick Montgomery, I didn't know what to do with this role, and I was struggling. So I thought, well, I'd just go with the person I know who can do the most unhinged, which is Jason Mantzoukas. He does unhinged really well. So I thought that would work. And I also cast Coldshank and Pismo. Coldshank, Seth Morris, and Pismo was Regina King, the two cops that they're having a bit of a prank war with.
Mm-hmm.
And for Kayla Reese, I went with Reese Wakefield. And when we did our show last week about Sanctum, he was the lead actor in that. He was also like one of the bad guys on The Purge, but he still has this very young, angelic looking face. So I was hoping to kind of flip that a little bit and make him kind of deep. And then for the captain, I went with Forrest Whitaker.
As did I.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Cool. No, 'cause I don't know. It's a weird that there's this weird cop trope of angry black police captain, but it's one I really adore.
Oh, yeah.
And since he was in the original, I figured he's now of the age to be the captain. So,
yes.
And he can yell with the best of them. I'm
yes,
okay
yes.
with that. I wanted at least one person in there. I haven't done that in a while, pulling somebody. So yeah, I did the same thing.
Nice. And he does, like, I think he could do frustrated captain really well.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. For my director, I'm just going to lead with this now. Paul Feig from Spy.
Nice.
Gives you the idea of the energy I'm going for.
Yes.
For my Chris, Ryan Reynolds. For my Bill, Melissa McCarthy.
Very nice.
For my Maria, Michaela McManus. She was in Aquarius. She's mainly TV actress, SEAL Team, and The Village TV series. Really beautiful actress. So I was kind of going for a look and a type. For the day shift cops of Phil and Jack, for Phil, I went with a more older actor, Colm Feore. I wanted somebody with a more veteran-y feel. Michael Ealy, I went as Jack, which would have been the Forrest Whitaker character originally. He was the android partner on Almost Human.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Fantastic actor. As yes. I said before, Forrest Whitaker as Captain Giles. For Stick, I did something interesting because there's so much hatred for this guy. Because he stepped into Captain America's shoes, and how dare he? So Wyatt Russell, let's take that energy and use you as our villain. Since everybody fucking hates you. Which, still, internet, fucking get over it. Like, he did a good job. You hate, he's an amazing actor who made you hate him for being in a role you were supposed to hate him for. So, you know, don't just give him death threats for being really good at his fucking job. I'm still mad.
I don't blame you. I'm with that one. I mean, you're not supposed to like the character, but you can't hate on the actors playing the character just because he took a job.
It's a television series.
And
Jesus
he adds
Christ.
The dark edge that was supposed to happen.
Exactly. So I think he's kind of got the perfect balance right now. And since everybody's on Let's Hate Wyatt Russell a bandwagon, me not among them, let's use that.
Yeah.
And for his partner, I went with Brenton Thwaites as Kaler.
I like Brenton nice. Thwaites. I used him a couple times recently, so that's why I didn't go with him.
Yeah.
But he was actually on my short list.
I did struggle casting that character, but it was the hardest one for me. Yeah, I felt like maybe that would have been the right spot for him. I don't know. He might actually be too big of an actor for that kind of role, but given the extra little we've given him, and hopefully he can play with that a little bit, because I don't know if we've ever seen him do anything too comedic. He's pretty serious as Nightwing, so on Titan.
Yeah. I know the first season there was some humor in that one. There's that one scene where he goes, "Fuck Batman," made me laugh every time.
yeah. So yeah, but I think we all kind of went with the comedy balance. I really like the idea of like a manic Melissa McCarthy, like attracted to her partner. I like, it was just instantly in my brain. Once I had Melissa McCarthy in there, everything else kind of fell together. And I'm like, well, it's got to be Paul Feig.
Yes. Have you watched the new one on Netflix yet?
Not yet.
Thunder Force?
Yeah, it's fun. It's not good.
Oh, it's silly fun. It's great silly fun.
And I've realized that Paul Feig hates his wife. He hates her. He makes her do some pretty humiliating things on camera. And I'm sure that's partly her. I mean, she has no shame. But she does some pretty embarrassing things in that one.
I'm all for it. I like seeing her. Even that horrible, horrible puppet cop movie she did. She's still very watchable.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And it makes me think when I'm like with their dynamic, part of what he's wondering about and through this whole stakeout, he's like, women are like, how are you making such bad choices? I found a good man. We need to talk about this. Like, he wants to talk to Billy about it. And then he wants to talk to Maria about it. Like, he's just trying to help their lives.
Yeah. He's like the guru of relationships because his is so healthy. I like that actually.
His is healthy and stable, and he's like, you guys got to love yourselves. You deserve a good man. Come on.
See, and now that's where I'm like 100% on board with Ryan Reynolds, because he does that type of sort of ranty help speech really, really well.
Yeah. The one other thing I wanted to like kind of maybe feel out is a little bit more about Kaler. We know he's kind of a deep person. I'm just wondering like how he got into the whole bit of breaking out Stick and why he continues to stick with Stick even though Stick is doing bad things.
That has to be explained somewhere. I mean, it can be through dialogue and exposition, but it does need something needs to be addressed, because they're just too different dynamically. I can't see Kaler being part of Stick's gang.
Like, how did they even meet?
Well, I think when I established, like, I had briefly mentioned, and we kind of passed over it, that he could be a brother. Simple as that. It's brother loyalty, and they have worked jobs together, but he doesn't believe in the amount of violence that his brother does, but it's still family. And simple as that, and then you can move on.
I was thinking maybe it was more of like an obligation on behalf of another family member, like his uncle or his dad used to be part of Stick's crew. You get the feeling that Kaler's not really cut out for the criminal lifestyle. No.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe we can get that kind of coming out during the road trip a little bit. Yeah. Maybe it was a family crew and dad died on the last job that got him put in jail.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit of tension that actually is between the two as well.
Or better yet, his dad's the one who fucked up and that's why he's in jail.
Okay.
But his dad's he's dying or whatever. And so now the son has to take on his dad's debt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe dad died while he was in jail. And then he's like, I know, I don't want to be here. But you could have the whole thing where part of the time they're driving, Kaler's like, these seem like good choices to you. Like, do you believe in karma?
Yeah. I think that works really well, is sort of having him paying off a debt for somebody else.
And it would go into the whole karma thing where he's like going, I believe in paying off the debt so that everything is clear, but I don't like what you're adding on to my karma. And that's where we're going to have a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Make him more of a sympathetic character. Like he's in a situation he doesn't want to be in either.
Yeah.
Oh, you know who I didn't cast is I can't remember the name of the character, the redheaded guy they were chasing at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, I didn't cast him.
Oh, none of us did him.
No, and he's kind of a critical character. He doesn't have a lot of dialogue, but
we all kind of forgot about him. Yeah, he's just one of those guys that keeps turning up again. But yeah, off the top of my head, it's not coming to me. I feel like we should do a natural redhead, because redheads just get the short end of the stick.
Yeah. Well, not always. We try our best. who's the bad guy? Like, who's in a lot of Guy Ritchie movies? The one redheaded guy, and he's been in The Transporter. Oh, gosh.
Well, I would say Jason Statham, but I know that's not who you're going for.
And not Vinnie Jones.
No, you don't want anybody too recognizable.
No.
She could be thinking of Jason Fleming, but I think he's too old for that part.
Yeah, Jason Fleming, and he is very old.
Yeah, you want somebody who's like in their 30s. Tops.
Rupert Grint.
Oh, actually, I kind of like that.
Yeah.
Although there's a guy who's he's in his 30s who looks like he's 50.
No, he's
well, it doesn't matter how old he looks.
No,
right?
That could be fun. Actually, that could be fun to have a Harry Potter dude in there.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun. And you know what? That could be part of our conceit as well. When the FBI is sort of reaching out, unbeknownst to anybody, that this character is actually has always been part of Stick's crew, like sort of an ancillary member, and he's actually there to keep an eye on his wife and kid, or girlfriend and kid, but nobody knows this.
Ooh,
guarding the money.
Yeah. And that would make it even funnier is that he missed that because he doesn't know where the money is. So he had no idea that when that couch got thrown out that the money went to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a thought. Yeah. I mean, but I don't know. Because they're chasing him on something else and to have him keep showing up in the neighborhood.
Like I said, it's one of those things that you reveal at the end of the movie. You can actually say you didn't even know that the couch was gone. Right, and he just kind of revealed that he was there to keep an eye on things. Yeah, you don't want him popping up more than the three times that he does.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
Like I said, nobody knows that he's got more of a connection, that he actually was part of the crew. Should have been aware of everything that was happening, but wasn't, because it doesn't make him look very competent then either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Because you'd think he'd notice the two cops who'd been chasing him were watching the house that he was supposed to be watching.
Yeah, exactly. True.
Well, he does get kind of caught at one point, and that's why he's in the station. So he's sort of taken out at that point. And that's why he wouldn't know.
Yeah, he felt like more of like a hired local when they got there, but they didn't establish any of that. He just kind of shows up with the boat at the end and it's like, well, who are all the middlemen here that we never see?
Right?
And that also bugged me. So to have a little bit of a connection there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we could actually even say, too, hey, a bit of dialogue on the road trip and say, hey, yeah, I called this guy and he'll be ready. And if you're paying attention, we already know that that's the perp from the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It just ties that together just a little bit better.
And you could have him bitch about Seattle. He's like, I don't want to be here.
It's murder on my hair.
Yes, exactly. Do you know how much more often I have to color my hair? It's not good. No. I didn't want this curl. This is what's happening now. This is what the humidity does.
Yeah, we've actually pulled this more back into comedy, and I like that. I felt like they were trying to maintain a balance, and it's weird that the critics thought they did it really well. I didn't, but maybe it was just a different mentality in the 80s. But, I mean, considering some of the good ones that did come out, I'm still baffled as to how well it was received. IMDb gave this movie a 6.6 out of 10. Let's take a stab at the Rotten Tomatoes. What do you think the critic score is?
71.
Okay.
I'm going to lean more towards the 63-ish.
88%.
The fuck?
Dude.
Right?
What the hell, man?
Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck are you guys on? Now, the audience was a little more realistic. Let's take a quick guess at that.
I'll go first this time, Krish. I'm going to stay with my 63.
Okay.
And I'm going to stay with my 71.
Okay. You guys are both over. Now, instead of under, 56% audience score, which I feel like is for the one of the few times where I agree with the audience, that was a pretty decent barometer on this movie, where I feel like it's a middling action movie in my mind. I mean, I think they do a pretty decent job with the pieces, but the only thing that makes it watchable are decent actors in those parts. It's not a very good script. The comedy, as we established, is terrible.
Yeah.
So it was an agonizing 2 hours for me. It really was.
Well, you know, I think the problem is I mean, you have a little bit of action at the beginning, then no action at all pretty much until the end. So it's not an action comedy.
No.
It's a comedy, quote unquote, bookended by action.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, fairly simple structurally. And like I said, it could have been done in a 45-minute television episode just as competently.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Can we touch on, just before we go, the one spot where, like, the drunk friend of Maria's, like, Maria's friend's husband comes over?
Yes, I did want to address that.
Yeah, and he goes all calm and cool with that. And then when they have their blow-up because she's mad because he lied to her, he grabs her by the jacket and shakes her. But with this other guy who's really violent, he's just super calm. Like, that juxtaposition pissed me off.
Well, I mean, I know what the initial thing with the drunk husband of her friend that we never actually see. I hate it when they talk about characters that they never show us. So she's got a friend whose husband or boyfriend is the jealous type, and she's gone walkabout because he's a dickhead when he's drunk, and he came over to her house to find his wife, girlfriend, whatever, who isn't there, who's never been established, and he's freaking out, and he's being kind of hostile and pretty handsy, and you think he's going to hit her. And Richard Dreyfuss comes storming in from across the street.
Right?
Because the door is open. I was just happened to be by, and talks him down. Now, that establishes something she was quite attracted to. He talked this guy down from a violent position and to the point where the guy left willingly and apologetically even. So that was something that was an attractive trait to her. And I get that. That was fine. I hate that they did nothing to establish that scene. It was just kind of thrust upon us.
And
that I did not like.
No, and that could have been set up pretty easily through the phone taps.
Yeah.
Having conversations with that girlfriend, right?
And she just forgets that, like, he just showed up. Like, how did he know? She's not stupid, but this kind of makes her look a bit stupid.
Well, and that's where we can have the kid, too. Like, that's a double jeopardy thing, because now we got this hostile dude showing up.
Yeah.
And there's a kid at risk as well. I mean, you know what? The end result is the same. He's going to come rushing over to her rescue, right?
Yeah, but we can fix that a little bit. We can give the kid a little bit more to do. Is he gets her phone and calls him because the kid knows he's across the street because they've established that they're over there flipping the house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then there's a reason for him to be coming over.
Mm-hmm.
And that fixes some of the creepiness of the whole him watching things too, right? Yeah. He already kind of knows because they're watching, but now the kid's kind of moved it forward and it eliminates one of the questions that she might have is like, why were you here?
Why don't we have like the kids build a relationship with the Bill character that we've made female, Melissa McCarthy or whatever.
I like that.
Then we have two dynamics going at the same time. And maybe the kid's super smart, knows kind of has an idea what's going on and trusts this character. So maybe the kid runs out and maybe this whole confrontation doesn't happen with Chris, but happens with Bill. I still want to keep her Bill. I like the idea of her being called Bill.
I call her Billy, but everybody calls her Bill because.
Yeah. I mean, especially if it's Melissa McCarthy, she looks like a Bill.
Yeah. You can even have her say a line, don't call me Billy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, or is a Bill or people call me Bill? Like, it was Isabel and then it went to Bell and then I felt more like a Bill. So then we went to Bill.
Yeah.
And that's how I'm Bill.
Yeah. So I don't know, but I like the idea of because if we have a new character, the character needs a little bit more to do as well.
Yeah.
We've made the character already interesting, whether it was a boy or a girl or whatever, but to have that character bond with our other stakeout person, I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah. And also have the kid be like, you guys are slow at building.
Yeah.
And
Bill never lets her go into the space because they're not actually working, right? So they're always sort of in the front yard talking and visiting and stuff like that. And you could even have – I think the child character or the daughter – it should be a daughter because maybe she gravitates towards sort of this strong male character.
Yeah. She's kind of like, I wish my mom knew how to do like more kind of stuff around the house. I mean, I'd like to learn how to build stuff so I don't have to worry.
She respects her mom, but she sort of sees something about – really appealing about Bill that – she makes her sort of want to know more, right?
Yeah.
Sort of this sort of odd surrogate second mother, father figure kind of thing happening.
Yeah.
Yes.
I like that.
I do like the fact that the male role model is the female.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I dig that entirely because it kind of works with the dynamic we've come up with here.
Yeah. I'm liking this.
That was a very good last minute. That's a good last minute addition, I think.
Yes.
Well, I don't know if I'd rewatch Stakeout 87 again. I mean, I've seen it a couple times now. That's good. But I'd see ours.
Yes. The only thing I would take away from the original Stakeout was I do remember having the soundtrack on tape. And I really liked it.
Very 80s. Even that, I felt like some of the music was a little out of place, but... It was 80s music. Oh, it was fine.
I liked it.
There was a certain model that all these movies had, and they were going for it. And I don't know. I wasn't buying it the whole way through.
Oh, yeah.
This might be one of my more dissenting watches. And I feel like I might be in a minority on this one.
I found it a very tedious watch myself.
Yes, me too.
I think the only thing we disagree on is the chemistry. And I think that maybe it's because you're right. I think it's because you checked out of it fairly early. I think Estevez has chemistry with everybody. I've never seen him not have chemistry with somebody.
I did not think he did. I mean, I was out right away when they were having breakfast at the diner. Right away. It was just wasn't working right away. I don't know if it was the mustache moment.
I think it was the mustache.
See, seeing him with the mustache really just throws a big cold bucket of water at everyone.
Yeah, because he should never, ever, 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 ever have a mustache. Yeah. It makes him look really strange.
It sure did.
But once I stopped seeing it, I really enjoyed the moments where I did get with Estevez. I just don't think there was enough of him.
Mm-hmm. They just didn't establish much with him. He was just kind of there.
And I think that might be where part of the problem too is they established this partnership, but it really wasn't one.
Yeah, no. And considering how charismatic he is in other movies, it felt like he was being wasted to me anyway. And
no, I agree with you.
Yeah, it was disappointing.
Yeah.
The usage of Emilio Estevez was disappointing.
Yeah, they're not all going to hit. I don't even remember Men at Work being that great, but, you know.
No, it's awful.
Oh, it's not. It's terrible.
It's awful. Yeah,
I think he's got good chemistry with his brother, but the movie itself is pretty terrible.
Yeah.
Young Guns, still, it's a crazy movie, but I loved it. I loved it.
Both Young Gun movies. Yeah.
I can't wait till Young Guns 3 comes out.
Oh, what? Wait, what?
It's in production as we speak.
Holy crap.
With who? They're not that young.
I know.
Most of them are dead. As far as characters go, like, what's it supposed to be?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think all you have is Kiefer and Emilio from the original. I can't remember. It's been a while since I saw Young Guns.
Yeah, because Emilio was like an old man who, he faked his death, or his death was over exaggerated. I can't remember.
Well, one of the myths about Billy the Kid was he lived to ripe old age rather than died, and somebody on their deathbed claimed to be the real William Bonney. I don't remember if
Kiefer Sutherland.
I don't remember if Kiefer Sutherland's character survived that movie or not.
I don't think many people did.
Yeah, because Lou Diamond Phillips didn't.
Yeah,
Sheen didn't.
Dermot Mulroney didn't. Yeah. Sheen didn't.
Yeah.
Boy, I don't know who's left.
Yeah,
well, maybe it's the Young Guns of the kids of the Young Guns. I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll see. But Estevez is involved.
This sounds like a terrible idea.
I still want to see it.
Oh, I mean, if they can keep that kind of balance and energy up, I would be happy to see it. I just don't know how it could exist.
The only way I'd love it is the tagline where it's Young Guns 3, much, much older guns.
Or not so young anymore.
Yeah. Not so young guns.
Not so young guns. Young Guns 3, we're not young anymore.
I used to be a good shot, but the arthritis is throwing me off.
And the glaucoma makes it real hard to see more than 2 feet.
It's so bad. Young Guns 3, we're too old for this shit.
All right. With that, I'll bid you adieu. Make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast on whatever your podcast provider is. Tell your friends, family, friend and foe where to find us. Sam, where can they find us?
Well, lots of places, but you should go to invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
And over there, you can find a handy dandy little tab that'll take you to our store where you can buy some awesome Invasion of the Remake merchandise. You can get t-shirts, posters, mugs, PPE masks, and so much more. We've got some cool designs up there based on posters of some of the movies we've talked about. We've got the Angry Fish line. We've got some kick-ass Podcast Forever PPE masks and so much more. Check it out. It's TeePublic, and all you have to do is hit the button and it'll take you directly to the store and you can see all the cool stuff. And we've got stuff adding all the time, so please check it out. And if you find something you like, pick it up, and a few dollars gets kicked back to the show, and 100% of what we make goes back into the production of the show. We thank you very much for your purchase, and you're going to look really cool wearing an IOTR shirt.
Absolutely.
And of course, follow us on our social media at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com if you want to send us your suggestions, your corrections, and your comments, and of course, your fan challenges. Make sure you, when you make a fan challenge, it is prior to the year 2000. You might, if you're really good at making an argument, you might be able to squeeze one from 2000 or 2001 in. It's like a 20-year barrier, so we've just kind of cracked it.
Yeah. But
you've really got to sell it to me. Really got to sell it to me. Try to pick something a little unusual. I mean, at this point, you've seen our fan challenges is what they're like, so, I mean, make them challenging. I don't want to have, like, Citizen Kane brought up and, oh, that could have been better. No, probably couldn't. No. At least not from us. So don't throw something that was really awesome at us. And, you know, that's just like tweaking something that's already great.
Yes. Something with a nugget of a good idea where you're like, that's kind of what we're looking for.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing universally revered because that it's revered.
Yeah. I mean, it might be fun for us to fuck it up if that's what you're looking for.
We can only make it worse.
We can definitely make it worse. But if that's what you're looking for, then maybe we'll do that. I'd rather leave those greats alone. Find something that was a neat idea, was terrible execution. Those we can play with, those we can have some fun with, and hopefully make a good episode out of it. Send us your fan challenges and be patient. We'll try to get them on the schedule. We've got our own stuff we'd like to do too, so if you've made a request, just be patient. Don't worry if I've told you we're going to do it. We will do it. It just might take some time. We've tried to find the right spot to put these things in, so hopefully we'll make you happy down the road, but just be patient. We'll get there. Now, next week, we got a comparison. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it's very seasonal, and it's been a while since we've done a seasonal option. So check us out next week. Until then, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And I continue to be Trish.
And we are out of here.
Supposed to give you a call, wasn't I? Forgot. Is he gonna be okay?
Not if you don't keep out of the way.
Hey, man. How you doing? Okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm just a little tired.
A little tired, huh? Well, listen. You go home, you get plenty of rest. Because when I get better, I'm gonna break both your legs. You're dust, Lisa. You hear me? Dust. Yeah.
Not only did you hit me once, but twice.
Hey, this is one of the worst nights of my life.
Well, I just want to know if she's going to be okay.
She's okay.
Okay.
Roger. Let's think she got something going on with that girl. He wants an investigation.
What are you talking about?
You said you're in a lot of trouble. Yeah, I told him you're always in trouble.
You saved my life.
What that means, don't you?
No. What?
You belong to me now.